Hi guys, so it looks like Labour is on a bit of a winning streak if we look at the recent by-elections that have been taking place. And there's certainly a very, very strong feeling that they will be forming the next government in the next general election, which is likely to be next year. So recently, obviously, there's been the party conferences that have happened recently. Just before that, we also had some statements from Rishi Sunak about being the friend of the motorists, the current Prime Minister, Conservative Prime Minister. And of course, they put out a plan for drivers as well at the party conference. So I covered that in another video, so you can check that out. The link will be above below. This is the video, go check it out. So I thought it's only fair that as it's looking more and more likely that Labour will form the next government, that we should look at what Labour's plans for the driver, the car, the motorists are. And indeed, they do have a plan for drivers and a plan for automotive. And so what I'll do is I'll go through those and highlight the key things or what they're saying so that you can see where they stand on the automotive issues. And I'll do all of that right after this. A brown car guy. Right guys, so settle down. This will be a long one because I'm going to go through this in some detail. And there's actually two aspects to this. So there's actually the plan for cars, which I don't actually have. I'll explain why in a minute. But I have the excerpts of interviews, with the Labour Shadow Transport Secretary, Louise Haig, to see what she says about that. And then there's another thing that we've got to go through, and that's actually the plan for the automotive sector, driving a growing economy. Yes, driving a growing economy. Clever, huh? And that is from, well, there's a foreword on that by Jonathan Reynolds, who's the Shadow Secretary of State for Business and Industrial Strategy. So that part is going to look at where the automotive industry is what its status is now and what they're going to do to help it and where they're going to take it. And the first part, well, theoretically, it's supposed to be for drivers. So let's see what Louise says. So Louise, of course, Louise Haig, as I mentioned, Labour Shadow Transport Secretary. She has pledged to nationalise railways and public ownership of buses, set out transport plans focused on supporting drivers, passengers and communities. Well, that sounds good. We will put the public back in control of the essential public transport they depend upon. So I guess that relates to, you know, buying nationalizing the railways and not having any private bus networks, putting them all in public ownership, I guess. The Labour government will bring an end to the farce on our railways. We will end the failed experiment. We will cast aside the tired dogma that has failed passengers. We will improve services and lower fares, and Labour in power will bring our railways back into public ownership. Now, this is it's interesting because, you know, I mean, right now, I don't know when you're watching this, but I'm recording this on Saturday, 21st of October, 2023. And it's just, you know, and a friend of mine was down here from Scotland and he couldn't get back to Scotland because the rail networks are just messed up. And just on the news now, it has been said that, well, if you're planning any transport over the next couple of days, don't. Because you're not going to be able to get anywhere because railways are flooded, roads are flooded. So, and the railway particularly being like a big problem, you know, it's like all of a sudden this is the network that people are supposed to rely upon to get around, and suddenly you end up stranded because for whatever reason they can't go anywhere. And also when you look at the price of these things, I mean, then railway tickets are not cheap. Really, they're not. You know, sometimes you look at it and you go, actually, it is cheaper to drive, even with putting petrol. You take a gas guzzler, take a V8 muscle car, and it'll be cheaper sometimes than a railway ticket. So that kind of doesn't really work. So that's a good thing. So let's see what else they say. Ms. Haig promised to launch an independent review looking at the failures of HS2 and learn lessons on delivering major projects on time and to budgets. As those of you that are following the story around HS2, the rail network that now is only going to go up to Birmingham, but not Manchester. I think Keir Starmer has already given that because Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has already said that he's not going to extend it beyond that. It's not going to go the full distance, unlike Rocky. But I think Labour also said actually that they wouldn't be there. Well, they wouldn't commit to putting it back on track, so to speak. So launching an independent review doesn't mean that they will actually extend it all the way to Manchester. It just means that they're going to find reasons to say why Conservative was so crap and not being able to do it. So let's look at plan for drivers. This is what they're talking about now. Ms. Haig announced Labour's own plan for drivers that would take action on rip off prices at the petrol pump and crack down on unfair car insurance fees hitting people hard. Interesting. I just did a video on insurance premiums, and again I'll put the link below. This was the video, go check it out. It was a fascinating discussion with he's a motor claim guru. He's an absolute expert, an industry professional, an expert on car insurance. So there's some fascinating insights and some incredible stuff in there that even I didn't realize. And so a lot of it went a long way to explaining why premiums have jumped, which we'll come to in a minute, over the last year or so. She posted on social media, so this is going back to Louise Hague, Labour will support drivers with a laser-like focus on the cost of living, saving them up to £685 a year. Does that include the £12.50 that we have to pay for you, Liz? Or the £10.50 that we have to pay, or will have to pay, to use the tunnels in London? Anyway, that's another video. Labour will take action, and those were introduced by a Labour mayor, by the way, just putting it out there. Labour will take action on unfair practices, pushing up car insurance costs, and set up a tough new fuel watchdog to tackle rip-off prices. Well, that's a good thing, because, you know, you do see that a lot. You know, the moment you see internationally, you hear about the oil barrel price going up, it seems the petrol station prices go up immediately. Like immediately, like, hang on, it's like, how could that could not have affected you that quickly? That's not possible. And yet, it's, you know, you go out, you hear the news, you go out and it's gone up by 10 pence. It's like, what? Whereas on the other hand, when you hear about barrel prices coming down, that doesn't seem to filter through as quick. That seems to take a while. And of course, there's lots of variations. Remember when they cut five pence on fuel duty, a couple of years ago, a year and a half ago? And we didn't really see that translate into the petrol pump, honestly. I think some dealers simply absorbed that. Oil companies, I should say. So she pledged to review, this is back to Louise Hague, she pledged to review unfair hidden fees used by car insurance companies on standard policies. Unfair hidden fees, that's interesting. We didn't talk about that in our other video. Car insurance costs have soared by an average of almost 50% over the past year, with premiums at their highest level since 2018. Well, we know that and we discussed that, and that is a big problem for a lot of people right now. In her party conference speech, Mrs. Hay announced that she would order the Competition and Markets Authority and Financial Conduct Authority to launch formal investigations into the soaring prices. The watchdogs will look at hidden costs, including setup fees that now add an average of £40 to bills. Well, it's good, although if you manage to cut the £40 off our premiums, it's not going to make a hell of a lot of difference. But anyway, I suppose every little bit counts. But of course, this is to look at also all the other issues as well, not just the £40. That's just one aspect of it. Okay, continue. They will also examine the use of unfair postcode pricing, as there are concerns that those who live in less affluent areas or places with a more ethnically diverse population are paying more than they should for the premiums. It has been warned that differences in pricing go beyond typical risk factors of crime rate and road traffic accidents. Well, that's interesting, and that's just not a bad thing, actually. That's good if they can equalize it and not have it basically discriminating against certain people in certain communities. Mrs. Hague also wants to extend the existing 14-day penalty-free cancellation period for car insurance. But hasn't said extended to how long. Is that extended by a month or what? I don't know. It just says 14-day penalty-free cancellation period. She wants to extend that. Okay. She has also announced a plan to set up a watchdog to keep oversight of the cost of petrol and diesel. We mentioned that already. Ms. Hague said last week, or is it Ms. Hague? I don't know, really. Last week, the Conservatives exposed just how out of touch they are with reality facing drivers up and down the country. Instead of supporting drivers through the cost of living crisis, Rishi Sunak was reduced to parroting bizarre conspiracy theories. It is clear he has nothing left in the tank. See what you did there. That's clever, yeah. Bizarre conspiracy. Oh, God, this is that old thing about. This is like, it was an article in The Guardian, wasn't it, a couple of weeks ago, I think, where they're like, the war on motorists is a myth. It's all a conspiracy. It's not. It's not. I mean, even Rishi Sunak has said, literally him quoting Rishi Sunak, I'm putting the brakes on the war on motorists. And one or two other high-profile people I've spoken to have said, yes, there is a war on motorists, you know. So it's not a conspiracy theory. It's what's actually happening. Anyway, that's another video. But the reality is that's a little bit unfair to say that. Labour will tackle the real Labour will tackle the real concerns of drivers with a laser-like focus on the cost of living. Our plan means action on unfair petrol and car insurance costs, removing barriers to infrastructure improvements actually delivered. I think that means the road network, reducing traffic clogging up our roads and boosting the charge point rollout. The traffic clogging, by the way, a lot of people would in London area, anyway, I'm not talking about nationwide, but certainly in London area, a lot of that could be put down again to the Labour mayor because of the very poor road management, traffic management, roadwork management, and deliberately, bicycle lanes, narrowing of lanes, bus lanes. It's just, it's just hasn't been thought through. That's what's actually clogging up the roads, and I'm sure that most of London's drivers will agree with me on that. Now, they talk about this plan for drivers, but I've been on the Labour website and stuff, and I cannot actually find the document. All I can find is her talking about it. So I've looked for it. I've tried to find it. I cannot find it. If anyone has it, or if it exists, or if it doesn't exist, then let me know if that's an actual plan or if it's her plan. Is it documented? Is it an actual report, or is it her just talking about what she thinks it should be? However, there is an actual document, and I'll put the link for that below. It's a PDF document. This is on the Labour Party website. And this is called, as I mentioned, excuse me, Driving a Growing Economy, Labour's Plan for the Automotive Sector. This thing features a foreword by Jonathan Reynolds, who's the Shadow Secretary of State for Business and Industrial Strategy. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read out probably most of his foreword, right? So like I said, this is going to be a long video. Settle down. I got some water. I hope you had some coffee or tea. But anyway, this will take a while, but it's worth it, right? Because if this party is going to form, if it's as looking quite likely at this stage, anything that happened in politics, of course. But, if this party is forming the next government in the UK and they'll be there for 4 or 5 years, then it's worth taking the time to understand, particularly for fans, car fans, car people, petrol heads, automotive enthusiasts, and those people affected by the automotive industry working in it or otherwise, or just part of the classic car community or car community. I think it is worth taking a bit of time to understand where they stand on these things and, how these things are going to, how them coming into power will impact us going forward. So, Jonathan Reynolds says, the automotive industry represents the best of Britain. That's nice of him to concede that, isn't it? It is our most valuable exported good, employs 800,000 people and adds £16 billion to our economy. In short, it is the jewel in the crown of our manufacturing sector. A bit more than that, actually. So it's a bit more than that, as I was saying. I just want to I've just quickly pulled up the SMMT website, Society for Motor Manufacturers and Traders. SMMT data, this is for 2023 so far. 450,000 cars built in the UK so far. Exports are up 13.6% in 2023, with 359,940 shipped worldwide. That's 80% of total production. That's typically how it is actually in the UK. It's 80% of cars made here are exported. Over half of these exports were to the European Union. That's 59.5%. And what else I can tell you, there's 30 manufacturers, they build in excess of over 70 models in the UK, which support up to 2,500 component providers. Automotive related manufacturing contributes £67 billion as turnover and £14 billion, as they said, value added to the UK economy. And they typically invest around £3 billion each year in research and development. As they said, over 182,000 people are employed, some 780,000 people in total across the wider automotive industry. So again, that's actually well over 800. We're talking nearly a million people. Over 859,000 cars, 72,930 commercial vehicles, and 1.6 million engines were built in the UK in 2021. And remember, that wasn't the good year. That was actually one of our down years. 8 out of 10 cars, that we've already said, they produced, the cars go to 850 countries worldwide. That accounts for 10% of total UK exports, generating £77 billion of trade. So these are just some of the figures that we talked about. So let's go back to what they were saying. So yeah, well, they said 800,000. It's actually more than that, 16 billion, yeah, I suppose, this year. So what else did they say? What else is actually, when I say they, what I mean is the Jonathan Reynolds. What else is he saying? This is an industry full of history and heritage, but also on the precipice of immense change. Our world is changing and our habits as consumers have to change with it. As the world pivots to generating electric vehicles, the UK automotive industry should be poised to jump at that opportunity. But years of neglect under the Conservatives risk leaving the UK automotive industry being lapped by competitor countries. Hey, no kidding. This is a fact. It's absolutely true. But also, you'll find from, you know, just from that sentence, you probably have ascertained, and you'll find that just as I'm reading through the rest of it, there's a major, major focus on electric vehicles in this document. Going back to what Reynolds was saying, it had, and referring to the Conservative government, it had wanted to ban the sale of petrol cars, yet it had failed to secure the battery making capacity needed to ensure electric cars are made in Britain. It says it backs British industry, yet it has failed to support to meet the rules of origin requirements that risk cutting off exportability to our most profitable markets, which of course, as we know, European Union 59.5%. Worse still, the government has now rode back on its promises to the sector. What I think what he's referring to there is Rishi Sunak announcing that the ban on petrol and diesel cars, new car sales, won't now take place in 2030. It's now been moved to 2035. That's according to the current government, according to Rishi Sunak. Worse still, the government has now rode back on its promise to the sector, causing more uncertainty and upending billions of pounds of investment. The endless stop-start of government policy has left the British automotive industry stalled. Labour will change that by offering policy certainty, investing for the benefit of the British industry, and empowering consumers to benefit from those changes. I think that's a very clear statement saying that when they come into power, they will change that back to 2030. I think that's that last sentence, I think very clearly it makes that statement, that they will change it back. Also, this thing about appending billions of pounds of investment, I mean, it doesn't really make a difference to the car industry, because the other thing that's happened is they have put in place this quota system for electric cars, which was the quota system that was originally envisaged. And that quota system current is pretty much the same as what would have been there if the 2030 deadline had stayed. So basically, up to 2030, it says that 80% of all vehicles sold must be EV. And in fact, I think that was going to be the case anyway for 2030, because of course 2030 was also going to allow hybrid cars, which of course has now changed. Hybrid cars will also only be allowed to 2035, and then that will be the cutoff point. But again, if Labour gets in, they're going to change it back to 20. They're going to change that deadline back to 2030. Personally, I always said that that deadline wouldn't happen because we won't have, you know, the infrastructure won't be there for a start. But they're going to address that. So let's go on and see what they says. This again, quoting Reynolds, Labour knows how important cars are, both for our economy and society. Growing up in Sunderland, home of the Nissan factory, cars are in my blood. Oh, really? Jonathan, are you a car guy? Are you? If you are, I'd love to chat cars with you. You know, I'd love to do an interview with you if you're available, and with Louise Haig as well, if you're up for it. But if you're a car guy, because, you know, this is one of the things I often lament, is I don't think we have enough car guys actually in a car. When I say guys, that covers both genders, you understand? I don't think we have enough car guys at top levels of government. And I think this is fundamentally a big problem. But this person says, oh, it's cars are in my blood. This is a direct quote. that's what he says, anyway. So going on. He's many of the friends I went to school with still work in the factory today. I know what the automotive industry means to local economies, good work and wages. But more than that, working families deserve the freedom and pride of having a reliable car in their driveway. I like that. Labour's mission is to ensure electric cars powered by cheap homegrown energy don't become the preserve of the wealthy. Okay, that's good. We believe everyone should feel the benefit of the transition to electric vehicles and cheaper running costs, be that the family car or the company van. Okay, good. Continue. A Labour government would drive the automotive industry into the future by accelerating domestic battery making capacity, investing in gigafactories, and removing planning barriers to get shovels in the ground. We will inspire consumer confidence and demand by fixing charging infrastructure and developing clear battery standard consumers can understand. So this is what I was saying about they're going to address the whole charging infrastructure thing. Importantly, we will seek to support businesses and consumers by working to reduce unnecessary red tape forced on them by the Conservatives' botched Brexit deal. We will press the government to ensure British businesses aren't harmed by the dangerous cliff edge due to the incoming rules of origin changes. At the same time, we will bolster our supply chain resilience and diversity and secure long-term research and development funding agreements for the automotive industry. Now, the rules of origin changes, I just yesterday put up a little video on that to explain what that's about. And this is something that, if it's not addressed, the SMMT has warned it will add about £3,500 to the price of every electric car because of the tariffs that will be imposed in both directions, Europe to here and here to Europe, because the rules of origin, depending on what percentage of the car's content is produced locally. At the moment, of course, with electric cars, it all comes from China, so pretty much. So that's a bit of a problem. So SMMT is demanding or suggesting that that should be expanded or extended by another 3 years until they can sort that out. It's been, the batteries is the biggest component, and that's the biggest issue. So this addresses the point that if we had more gigafactories here, we could make our own car batteries here. Now, let's look at the report itself. So this, that was his forward. Look at the report itself. Again, it's going to take a while, so just settle down. Labour's automotive plan. So industry has taken the opportunity to transition to zero emission vehicles with both hands, investing and innovating to develop the technologies needed for net zero mobility. Demand for zero emission vehicles, ZEV, has been successfully growing in the UK, with successful uptake among early adopters and particularly growth in commercial sales with businesses investing in their fleets. Yeah, well, we have said that businesses, actually fleet sales, are where the EVs are really being bought rather than the private sector. I carry on. However, growth in recent years has been stymied by public policy failing to match the ambition of the sector. Charging infrastructure targets are set to be missed, and public support for making the transition has left too many consumers nervous. To be honest, that last two sentences are actually quite honest and quite true when they say the growth has been stymied. So they're actually admitting that, yes, I mean, a lot of people are like, oh no, EV sales are growing, but the industry is like, no, they're not. They're reaching a saturation point. And then this report is saying, yes, I mean, it's been stymied a little bit, and that's largely because of people's reluctance to it, and partly because of the charging infrastructure. There's going to be more on that in a minute. The global shift towards zero emission, vehicles presents a unique opportunity for the UK automotive sector to invigorate itself and regain its competitive edge, but time is running out. Labour believes that by embracing the opportunities of the ZEV revolution, the UK can leverage its technological prowess, skilled workforce and industrial heritage to tap into new markets, create jobs and drive sustainable growth. To capitalise on these opportunities, the UK must focus on, well, on certain areas. Anyway, the thing is, though, about this sentence is, like, if somebody had made this statement about 10 years ago, that would have been a good statement to make. But honestly, now, when they talk about time is running out, time has run out. Because this is exactly what China has done. China has capitalized on this opportunity to grab a firm foothold in a unique and new emerging marketplace. And it's created this entire automotive industry infrastructure around that. So you ain't going to compete with China, let's be honest. Not on EVs, not at this stage, not right now. And especially not in the UK, but because our industry is a shadow of what it used to be. I will just say that in the 1950s, the UK was the biggest exporter of automobiles in the world. Think about that for a moment. Next section, I'll go in this section. So I'm just picking out key points from each of these sections. I'm not going to read the entire report, thank God. The next section is guaranteeing a consistent policy environment. We believe that the 2030 deadline is the right policy which industries was confident of hitting. So it's going back to the 2030 thing. Pushing back the date of the phase out will raise costs for British families by billions of pounds because electric vehicles have cheaper lifetime costs than petrol cars. And by 2030 are expected to have lower upfront costs. We will oppose the government's plans to water it down in Parliament, and through our industrial strategy, a Labour government would work with industry to proceed with hitting those targets. So that's further confirmation that they will go back to the 2030 deadline. This thing about it'll raising costs for British families by billions of pounds because electric cars have cheaper lifetime costs, I'm not so sure about that, because yes, over a longer term it could be argued, but then the trouble is that for example, the price of purchasing an electric car is so much more expensive, especially if they don't sort out the rules of origin thing, and B, the cost of energy is rising. So unless you can charge at home, if you charge public charges, it's actually quite expensive. So I don't think it's like that significant a saving, not at the moment anyway. But they're saying that what the other thing, of course, they're saying is that if we stick with the 2030, then electric cars will be cheaper to buy by 2030 because there'll be the market will only have electric cars. There could be a counterpoint to that. I'll let you say that in the comments. Next section. Accelerating, again, I'm just going to pick out the highlights from each section. Accelerating domestic battery manufacturing. Through our National Wealth Fund, Labour will part finance the new additional gigafactories required to hit that target, using catalytic public investment to unlock the much greater sum of private investment we need to attract manufacturers to establishing production facilities in the UK. These plans would create 80,000 new jobs, power 2 million electric vehicles, and add £30 billion to the UK economy. All well and good. I mean, if they can do that, that would be quite amazing. But it's just a case of, you know, the thing here is you've got to look at people like Elon Musk and basically try to engage him and encourage him and woo him basically to set up a gigafactory here is what you're really looking for. And other major manufacturers, you know. But there are some being set up here now. So Nissan, of course, have one. And then I think Tata are going to do it. Tata, owner of Land Rover Jaguar. So they are coming here. But it takes a while. It could take 5-6 years to set one of these up. Anyway, and they made a map where... Okay, so they also made a map where they wanted to put these gigafactories. So what they've done is they've identified places in... Mostly in England, it turns out, where there's enough power to power these. Is there something ironic about that? The gigafactories to make the batteries, but you need to figure out if you've got enough power to power the gigafactories to make the batteries that will go into electric cars that will need more power. And also where there's enough space to make them. So there's a map here. Anyway, this is the map. You can have a look at it. It's in the document, so you can download the document. You can have a look at it. Next section. Supporting R&D and innovation in EV technology. We know that the automotive sector needs certainty, stability in public R&D funding. The car industry has been left behind, while other sectors have received long-term R&D funding settlements. For example, the Aerospace Technology Institute operates a 7-year funding settlement, which has allowed for more private sector investment to be crowded in. Every £1 invested by government in ATI projects, that's at Aerospace Technology Institute projects, has resulted in £7 of private sector R&D investment. That is why Labour will commit to a 10-year automotive R&D funding, decisions matching that given to the aerospace to give businesses the certainty to invest in the UK. That's a good thing. That's got to be a good thing, isn't it? If they're basically saying, you know, you put £7 in, we'll put another pound in, that way we can build R&D facilities here in the UK to develop car technology, automated technology for the future. That's not a bad thing. It's incentivizing companies to come and put their R&D centers here. We certainly got the skills and the talent and the expertise, don't we? Delivering a comprehensive EV charging network. So this comes back to the whole thing is like, do we actually have enough of a charging infrastructure going forward? The government is on course to miss its aim of having 300,000 public chargers available by 2030. That's what I've been saying. You know, the number of chargers that we actually need to be able to hit the target by 2030, we don't have. And this Labour report says so. This will leave drivers fighting over available charge points, as there are set to be 64 electric vehicles per charge point in 2030. 64 electric EVs per charge point. That's double the current rate. So even now we say there's not, I mean, I'm in London and I say there's not enough charge points. And even now the rate is only 30 vehicles per charge point. Wow. That's going to be a bit of an issue. Access to charging is also hugely unequal across the UK. Yep. There are now more charge points in Westminster alone than in 9 of the biggest northern English cities combined. And ironically, of course, who drives to Westminster? You know, I don't drive. Why would I drive there? Labour will accelerate the electric vehicle charge point rollout by setting new binding targets. These targets will be binding on the government itself to give consumers confidence in future supply. We will then delegate responsibility tied to existing funding to regional and local levels to ensure there is a balanced spread of infrastructure across the country. A comprehensive EV charging network will put enormous demands on the UK's grid infrastructure. Labour will remove the barriers to grid expansion to facilitate the largest upgrade to our national transmission infrastructure in a generation. Expansions to the grid will allow businesses to install their own charging infrastructure for their fleets more quickly. I'm a little bit confused here because what this discussion about, didn't Rishi just sign off more energy sources to enable us to have more power? And isn't there a dispute about that? I'm not very clear on this. So let me know in the comments what the situation is. But, you know, doesn't that, you know, when you say that Labour will remove the barriers to grid expansion, doesn't that just mean building more power stations? I mean, it could be green. So it could be like, you know, hydroelectric, the big fans, you know, all of these sort of things. So, I mean, there are other ways of doing this stuff, but it does mean that we're going to need more power. So actually, this is another admission that one of the myths around electric cars, which we've been told isn't true, is that there won't be enough power to charge all the electric cars. And this actual sentence of the paragraph says that EV charging network will put enormous demands on the UK's grid infrastructure. So therefore, we do need more grid infrastructure. Interesting. Giving consumers the information to confidently go electric, next section. However, we understand that this is more than charging worries that are inhibiting consumers from making the transition to electric vehicles. Information symmetry has bred unnecessary cynicism and anxiety around electric vehicles. Interesting statement. For instance, 47% of drivers are worried about battery durability, but 56% overestimate the extent of range loss from batteries, believing it to be 3 times worse than it is the case. What they mean by that is that this idea that, like phone batteries, basically over time, the effectiveness of the battery is going to degrade. This is true. It does happen. And we have seen that in some models. But like they say, I do tend to find myself as well that people do overestimate it. My understanding is that most batteries will be good between right up to well over the 10-year, 100,000 mile mark. And it's only after that that they will begin to degrade. But it also depends a lot upon the conditions where the car is used, how it's charged mostly, what chargers are used. So funny thing is that using the really high-speed chargers actually put more strain on the batteries, heat them up, and actually degrade them. So there's a whole science behind this. But so they're saying that people are a little bit too skeptical when it comes to the batteries. So what would they do? Labour would introduce an electric vehicle confident labelling requirement on new electric vehicles that will give consumers the details they need to make informed decisions. These would mirror the Monroney stickers used in the United States and require constructors to provide accurate information on the carbon footprint of the vehicle's production and usage relative to an ICE comparison. I would love to see that. I would love to see the honesty of something like that. And the real life range of the vehicle's battery in different settings. That would be handy. And let me just repeat that. The real life range of the vehicle's battery in different settings. So that goes back again to the climate and stuff like that. And the expected life of the battery. This information would allow consumers to make accurate comparisons between models. I'd love to see that information. That would be quite good. If manufacturers could force manufacturers and the industry to give us honest information about the carbon footprint of actually producing an EV compared to ICE, and then the real world performance of these batteries, then that would be very, very interesting. And also it would really help consumers, and it would help people to make a decision, and it might either confirm or debunk many of the myths around EVs. With the used car market, going back to the report, with the used car market representing 82% of all cars sold in the UK in 2018, we also We also recognize that more must be done to support a future market of second-hand electric vehicles. Labour believes that assurances of the battery health of used cars is the best driver to stimulate demand, so we will implement a standardized battery health certification scheme for used vehicles similar to those already in place in other countries such as Norway. This is actually good forward thinking. This is something that I don't think often is thought about enough at this level of politics, is the reality of the implications of what's going to happen longer term with electric cars in terms of also the value. Because for a lot of people, like, well, why should I buy, you know, a 7-8 year old? If an electric car gets a 7-8 year old, why should I buy it? Because surely it's only got 3-4 years left, and then the value will just fall off a cliff because the battery will need replacement. At that point, it won't be worth it, and the car is basically scrap. So this will seek to address that and to try and give some reassurance to the used market. Otherwise, I can see the used market really getting all over the place. There's another section, continuing our exporting successes, forget that. Securing resilient EV supply chains, forget that. Next section I'm going to look at, the last section I'm going to look at, in fact, is tackling high energy prices. And this is, of course, does fundamentally affect anybody thinking of switching to EVs, because the price of electricity is going up. And of course, now with the Middle East situation, it looks like it's going to go up again, just as we were getting to a point before winter when we were breathing a sigh of relief that actually energy prices were beginning to come down as we're going to start to use our heating and stuff like that. Now it looks like energy prices are going to go back up again, because originally they were put up by the war in Ukraine, or actually according to this even before that, but I'll come to that in a minute. But now, of course, we've got the situation in the Middle East. We know that the industrial energy prices are crippling the competitiveness of our business and making UK a less attractive location for major investments. Even before Russia's illegal invasion of Ukraine, UK businesses faced the highest electricity costs in the G7, having soared by 72% between 2010 and 2021. Wow. UK electricity prices are the most expensive of any European automotive manufacturing country, and 59% higher than the EU average, meaning that last year UK manufacturers could have saved almost £50 million on energy costs if they were buying in the EU rather than the UK. That's buying energy, I'm assuming. So, wow. So they're saying even before Ukraine, our prices were too high. And of course, then they got really high and they were starting to stabilize. And now they're probably going to go back up again. So this doesn't bode well. Labour's mission to make the UK a clean energy superpower will deliver a cheaper zero carbon electricity system by 2030. How? This is the key mission of our industrial strategy, and we will invest alongside businesses in renewable energy, hydrogen carbon capture, and nuclear power. They say hydrogen carbon capture, but are they going to turn that back into fuel, or what are they doing with that? Or is that to produce more power? And nuclear power, that makes sense, to provide industries like automotive with access to secure lower cost energy, okay? Yeah, not just industry though. Remember consumers as well. We need lower cost energy. The significant increase in both clean power generation and clean industry will require 4 times as much grid infrastructure to be built. Let me repeat that. The significant increase in both clean power generation and clean industry will require 4 times as much grid infrastructure to be built. I just want to dwell on the contradiction in that statement. Clean power generation and clean industry, in order to make things cleaner, we need 4 times as much grid infrastructure, so we need to build more. That's supposed to help the environment? I digress. So just to pick that sentence up again, we will require 4 times as much grid infrastructure to be built in the next 7 years as has been built in the last 30. The grid has now become the single greatest obstacle to both deploying cheap, clean power generation and electrifying industry. We know that automotive businesses are seeking to move ahead and invest in their own decarbonization journeys. However, the queue for grid connections is growing out of control, with more than $200 billion worth of privately funded energy projects stuck. Wow. A Labour government would oversee the largest upgrade to our national transmission infrastructure in a generation. We have a comprehensive plan to secure this, including empowering a future systems operator to take the role of system architect, adopting a more strategic approach to identifying future demand, aligning our planning system with our ambitions, and implementing measures that use our energy system in a smarter way and reduce pressures on the grid. Wowzers. Wow. I mean, that's a really bold thing to actually end the report with. The fact that what you're saying is that our ambition is to do this, to go clean energy, to go EVs, However, there isn't enough energy. So we then need to address that. So there's a level of honesty there, which I'm quite surprised at, but it is true. But it's also a little bit worrying. And I do think that, you know, again, I've said this before elsewhere, is that this race towards net zero, we might actually be making things worse without stopping and thinking about what actually we are doing here. Anyway, long video, I know, but it was important to look at the report. Like I said, you can download the report below and go through it yourself as well, to think about what Labour is going to be doing about cars, motorists, and the automotive industry when it looks like they will come into power, probably towards the end of next year. I will love to hear your comments on this. I'm sure I will, and I'll see you all in the next video. Brown car
guy. Hope you enjoyed that video. If you did, please, please hit the like button and share this video as well if you can.
And while you're at it, check out these guys who also sponsor my content. I am deeply grateful to them because it helps me to buy new equipment, put fuel in the cars, and yes, buy a cup of coffee. You can do the same. Just go here or right here on YouTube. Just hit these three little dots down here and click on thanks. Make sure you're signed in first. My content is free, but this is how you can help me keep it that way. I may even send you a gift. Oh, by the way, watch this next.